Good evening. Welcome to our final Monday evening of the season before the summer break. As I think about that, we think of it as the last, the end of something, and yet it's also the beginning of something. So, as soon as we say this beginning and ending and first and last, it opens the perspective in different ways. If we fix only on the beginning and the end, if we see fix only on those relative points, then we miss the wider view. And we know how liberating that feels when we can let go of those fixed relative points of view. So tonight is our final meeting before I don't know how many weeks it will be. I think almost 2 months, when we will be back for a Dharma talk. Of course, there's a retreat in between, so there will be Dharma talks at the retreat. And as I looked at the date, I realized I didn't really even have to look too closely because I knew already, but 20 years ago tonight was the first of my two transmission ceremonies in Normandy. And so as I thought of that, I was saying, so was that the beginning of something or was that the ending of something? It was both, right? It was the beginning of a new role that I would fill, the position that I would hold. It was the end of the position that I had been in with my teacher and my fellow students for 10 years. And yet, it wasn't one or the other, and yet it was both, something like that. At the time, I wasn't thinking about either one of those things, really. I had no idea that 20 years later, on that same night, I would be sitting here doing this. No clue. And no one else who was present thought that either. I'm sure. Of the people on the screen, two people were present that night, Joa and Debbie, so. But we had no idea what we were getting into. I certainly didn't. And I didn't know what was ending either. And it just so happens that yesterday, 31 years ago, yesterday, I met Gen Roshi for the first time. And that too, I had no idea that that was the beginning of a new life for me, and that that was the end of another life. It was also the end of the beginning, because I would never meet her again for the first time. And all of these dates that we keep in mind, that we mark in our calendars, help us to situate, help us to maybe, if I think back 31 years ago, wow, that was a long time ago. I was really young. I only had one child, and that child was really small at that time. And I was a single mother. And if I think back 20 years, well, I did have two children, but they were quite young still. I was quite young still. But these are all relative points. At the same time, nobody has gone anywhere during that time. As I've said many times, Genpo famously said to me that night when we were going off for that first transmission ceremony, Amy's not coming back from that ceremony. And in a sense, yeah, sure, that's right. In another sense, this relative Amy comes and goes all the time. And it also doesn't go anywhere. Last week at this time, I was standing on a beach, probably somewhere in the south of France, and the water washes onto your feet when you're standing on the shore, and then it washes back. And if I look to the horizon, if I followed straight that ocean, I would come to North Africa. I'm on this coast of southern France. I would come to the other side of the Mediterranean, what we think of as the other side of the Mediterranean. And yet it's the same water. It's really the same land, because the land just goes deep, 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 deep down, and then rises again, comes back up on the other shore. But it's the same ground. It's the same water that's washing up on my feet, that's washing up on someone's feet on the coast of North Africa. I can see this drop of water on my toe, and that's the entire ocean. It's all the oceans. It's the clouds, and it's the raindrops, and it's the rivers. The lakes, it's everything. And yet it's just my foot right there on that specific beach at that specific moment. This also at the same time. And actually, if I can open to the and let go of these fixed points of beginning and ending, or this shore or that shore, or high tide or low tide, big wave, small wave, cold water, hot water, warm water, whatever. If I can let go of those fixed relative points, not only can I experience the entire ocean, the universe, I can also better experience just that drop of water on my toe. It seems paradoxical. It seems like, if I let go of this fixed position where I am, then and open to the wide universe, then I won't really experience where I am. But it's the opposite, actually. The more we open to the wide universe and see, William Blake's famous, see the universe in a grain of sand, we really see that grain of sand then. We really feel that water just washing onto our foot right then and there, that day, that moment, that place. It makes our experience of the world so much richer, our experience of this moment so much more clear, so much more relaxing. Like I said, I guess it must have been 2 weeks ago in the Dharma talk when I talked about and I guess somebody said Joe talked about this last week too, about the White Plum meeting that we had. And something that really struck me was someone from ZCLA who said, "My Zumi Roshi's teaching was relax sharply." And I really love that. That so much sums it up. Relax sharply. And we can, when we let go of our fixed positions and our attachment to the relative point of view, to our experience of the relative point of view, let's say, there's great relaxation. And it's sharp. It sharpens our relaxation as well. It sounds like a paradox. And yet, experientially, that's very much what happens. When we let go of our expectations, when we let go of our positions, whether it be political positions, whether it be beliefs, whether it be my practice is good, my practice is bad. Whatever it is, our position, then we can truly see that my practice is my practice. It's just this. This is it right here and now. There's nothing else. It doesn't have to be anything else. We talked about this in the study group on Saturday, too. I forget exactly what we said, but there was this element of when we cultivate samadhi, when we cultivate this just really being here now, when our mind is not drifting off in a thousand directions, we very simply just experience this, whatever it is. And we can experience that as being, that's what our practice is. Our practice is just to do that, just to be that, just this right here and now. Doesn't have to be anything else. And yet, of course, if I come back to this anniversary of 20 years ago tonight, that was the beginning of a path, you know, or yesterday. You know? And every year on that day, I send a message to Roshi and I remind her of that and thank her, share my gratitude to her for all that, you know, she introduced me to this path and everything she did for me and all the practice we've had together all these years. And at this moment, she's in Ladakh in India. And so she was sharing when we exchanged her experience of this moment, this that yesterday, that day was in Ladakh, in the high Himalayas. This with a friend of hers who is a Rinpoche, and visiting various monasteries with him and marveling at the way that the devotion that is expressed towards him and therefore towards her and Michelle, because they're traveling with him, and the beauty of that practice. That's what she experienced yesterday. I experienced something else yesterday. We both experienced, because I voted for her, or because we were voting and she was not here, so I had her the right to vote for her. And so we exchanged also with the results of the French election, which we were experiencing together. Not instantaneously at that moment sharing the messages together, but we both experienced that. Her in high Himalayas, me in Paris. We were both experiencing our practice, which is one practice, but in completely different ways. In completely different situations, circumstances, and yet it's one practice, and we know it, and that's what we share. And that's what was acknowledged. So that night 20 years ago was the first step of acknowledging that one mind, that mind-to-mind transmission, we say. And yet it's completely different, my way and her way. And the way we manifest and practice is completely different. And I just give that example of yesterday because 31 years ago on that day, we were in the same room together meeting. 31 years later, we're still meeting, but we're not in the same room. We're not even on the same continent. We're not in the same time zone. And yet we're still meeting. So is this an end, or is this a beginning tonight? Next Monday night, we will all be doing other things. We won't be sitting here on this screen together. And actually, the screen is a wonderful example of this, because we're in different cities, we're in different countries, different time zones. There's two different time zones represented here. Different rooms, different types of rooms, different clothing, and yet we're sharing this one moment together. And this one moment has at the same time ended and begun endlessly since we first connected. And it's just one continuous moment that we're sharing together here on the screen. That's why, there's this enigmatic thing we say in Zen of unborn, undying. Because birth and death are fixed points, and we're very attached to those. We're especially attached to liking birth and not liking death. Generally, globally. And yet, if we can see this not fixed being, this not fixed moment, this drop of water that is at once the coast of southern France, the water on the edge of France, and the water on the edge of North Africa. This is liberating. This is liberating. Of course, this sack of bones and water, as we say, does have a, what should we say, sell-by date, as we say, and when we buy food in the store. Or a wonderful quote that I heard about in relation to this whole controversy around Joe Biden. Mark Twain, the American author Mark Twain, who has always has these wonderful phrases, he wrote, falling to pieces, it's sad to fall to pieces, but we all have to do it. And so the question is, what does that mean to fall to pieces? And when does that begin? So I was having a discussion with someone about this, and they were saying, oh, yeah, I feel like now when I'm at this age, I've started falling to pieces. And my point of view is that we've started falling to pieces the moment that we're born. And that's just my opinion, man, as Bernie would say. Which for me is really liberating, because it takes off this edge of, oh no, I've started falling to pieces. Well, if I'm always falling to pieces, then there's no, how can I say this? There's no attachment to not falling to pieces then. This is just, I've been falling to pieces since the moment I was born. And I've also been growing and continue to grow even as I'm falling to pieces. Cells are regenerating. Of course, we know as we grow older in this sack of bones and water, cells regenerate more slowly, which can have a positive effect. My mother, like, what was it? I think probably 11 years ago, had lung cancer. And had surgery, and they got it all out, but there were some cells that remained in the lymphatic nodes, right? But the doctor said to her, Something else is going to kill you first. At her age, now she's now almost, she'll be 96 next month. At her age, he said, you know, cells, they regenerate so slowly that it would take longer than your what's left of your life with some cancer that, you know, deadly cancer to reform or something. That's great, right? It meant that she didn't have to choose to go through chemotherapy and all this radiation and stuff because she, for her, what was important was the quality of her life that remained, not the length of the life that remained or something like that. Because she knew already at her age when she was 85, well, it was limited, you know. So we know that cells regenerate more slowly, which, okay. That's just what it is. That's another relative point of view. Regenerating quickly or regenerating more slowly. We also know as we get older, I mean, you know, my example of catching bronchitis from my grandson 3 weeks ago now, I think it was. Her parent, his parents, my daughter and her partner, they caught it and they recovered very quickly. My husband and I are kind of still lingering with it, but we're older, you know. It's a everybody's falling to pieces, but we're falling to pieces in a different way at this moment, right? And if we can see that, that it's sad to fall to pieces, but we all have to do it. It's that we all have to do it that is beautiful, actually. That's just part of being alive. And if we didn't fall to pieces, we wouldn't be alive. And so we wouldn't be able to experience what we think of as this one beautiful life, this one precious life. And we can see it as the one precious life if we can appreciate that everybody's always falling to pieces. Mark Twain didn't say, yes, we all have to do it at some point when we're very old. He just said, we all have to do it. We're all doing it, something like that. Or the title of that Mark Epstein book. I think it's Mark Epstein, or maybe it's Pema Chodron. I don't know. Falling to pieces without falling, without, no, going to pieces without falling apart. I think it is. So, can we stay one? Can we be one with going to pieces, falling to pieces? We can be. That's the challenge of our practice, is that. So, how can I be one with falling to pieces? So, how can I be one with this evening that is the last and the first? If I fix on one or the other, then I miss the other one. So if I fix on this being the last, I miss that it's the first. And if I fix on it being the first, I miss it being the last. And probably because we don't want it to be the last, then we fix on it being the first. Someone told me, Corinne Roshi told me that she had a sesshin recently in her sesshins, her retreats are in her house. She hosts them in her house. And she was in her house, she had one of her close friends and someone who had practiced in her sangha sometimes was very ill with cancer and couldn't be at home alone. And so while she was being treated. And so she was staying at Corinne's house. And someone at the retreat, so someone who was supposed to come to the retreat, canceled the night before. And then after the retreat, called Corinne and was very upset and yelled at her and was very angry and said, I can't believe you imposed on us having this woman who she knew, this woman. staying there while we were having a sesshin. I think that's just outrageous that you didn't consult us, that we should all be, submitted to having her there and all of this. Corinne was really very surprised, but realized that actually this was coming from the woman was terrified. It terrified her to see this woman with cancer who has no hair and is sick, and very vulnerable. And it just terrified her. It put her in face to face with her own mortality, and it came out as anger. And because of that, she didn't allow herself to go to the sesshin, to the retreat. So you see how when we have these positions, when we're really attached to not wanting sickness, old age, and death, and we turn away from it, then we cut ourselves off from other things. So, and this is a really clear case of she cut herself off from going to the retreat, of being with her sangha, of even having the experience of taking care of this Dharma sister, and experiencing what that is. I mean, they didn't really have to do much to take care of her. They just cooked her food and made sure that she wasn't alone in her house all by herself. It wasn't, she didn't need a lot of care in that sense, and we see how anger takes over. Often anger is be, what's behind anger is fear. Often that's kind of the classic pattern. And then she was fearful and she became angry and she yelled at her teacher and said she was going to rethink all of her participation in the Sangha. Probably she, I mean, I would think that if she's a serious practitioner, she'll work on that and she'll probably come to some realization around it. I don't know. One might, that sounds like the best scenario, right? But that's just an example of what we do when we have a fixed position of not wanting to see sickness, old age, and death, not wanting to have things, wanting things to be a certain way, and then cutting ourselves off from just what is. So tonight is first and the last and the middle and the neither first nor last. So I will stop there and I will allow others to speak if you would like to. Adrien.
Good evening, everyone. So I think I have solved the first and last koan. This is my first and last Dharma talk this year. Yes. Well, I've solved it for myself. I'm making arrangements with my own practice. Yeah, I'm also taking notes about yelling at your teacher that I haven't tried yet, so I'll take making notes to try that sometime, maybe. Maybe in the retreat in Portugal, maybe we can I can work up some anger or something and build it up till we're there. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Other than that, I'm thinking as you were talking about the I don't know, it's the first time I'm also sort of on my terrace. So usually I'm very listening to a Dharma talk. So it's very strange because I have my earphones. So I have a very direct sound coming from you. But at the same time, I'm hearing everything that I usually hear, like the bells right now and the birds and everything. So it's a bit of an odd experience in a way. And I'm but as you were talking about the the falling apart as we're born, or I mean, or that idea. I was thinking suddenly I'm sitting under this structure here that is doomed to fall, but I mean that's the case of all architecture in a way. But I arrived here and on this terrace when I got moved into this flat, and this whole sort of structure up here that holds up the vine was covering the whole terrace anyway. It was just awful, so I sort of cut it open to open the space, and but I wanted to keep some of it, so I just looked around and I found this beautiful post here, which is like some wood from the river, which runs just down there. And I thought, oh, I'll just hold it up with this post. And so from the moment I did this, this whole thing is doomed. It has already fallen, so I have put it back because I like this post now, so holding it, etc. But just this year, in fact, I don't think you can see this now, but there's a little hole here. And for a couple of years, I've been looking at these big black bees that are called carpenter bees in French, des charpentiers. And I've been thinking, I know they dig their nests in wood, basically. So, and I was looking at them and and saw this hole a long time ago. And I was thinking, oh, if I were one of these bees, I would go there, of course. And it never happened until this year. So now, this year, once more, the doomed faith of this pillar and this whole structure here has been taken over by this bee who has now found this place and who has now been digging into it. So every time I come on this terrace, I see more of wood that has been extracted by it from inside the post. So faster and faster, we're getting closer to the breaking of it all, I suppose. So yeah, I don't know. This just came to mind, and this all being rather odd for me to be on my terrace at the same time as with you guys, I just wanted to share this. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi everyone. A good example of a clinging, it came up to me while you were talking, a good example of a clinging of on not wanting to let go is this guy in the US, this millionaire who spends all his money and time and energy trying to reverse the process of aging. I don't know if you've seen that. And I don't know if he managed to reverse or slow it, probably slow it down, but he has an insane routine, an insane lifestyle, an insane diet. And I keep thinking, does he actually enjoy his life? Or it strikes me. It's like if you're so focused on not dying, or like what Michael Jackson was doing to some extent also with trying to breathe some pure oxygen or something. What a waste of time to do that, and so that you waste your life by and the word that came up that we talked about it during the Sesshin this weekend is for me very connected to what you said is seamless. I talked about the seamless tomb, and to make the like another word for unborn is also, yeah, how do we make it seamless? That's what came up.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And actually, I would have a question for you. It's an impossible question to answer, but what comes up as what's the big insight that you've had over the past 20 years of practice since transmission? What is the thing that comes up as, wow, that's what comes up if I think of what did I learn in 20 years.
Yeah, well, I think in 20 years, it's just deepened my experience of this, of no time, of no. It's deepened. I've gained a lot of patience, what we call patience, because I experience time differently, and it's deepened my faith in all of you, you know, in others. Deepened my experience of the, you know, the universal potential realization that exists here and now, with everyone. I guess it's also, you know, been very humbling. Deepened the humility, I think, too, of not that when I started out, I thought I was this great, you know, amazing realized person. By no means was I that, did I think that. But I guess the humility has come with even letting go of that, you know, of letting go of any situation, situating myself anywhere, and trusting deeply the moment and my experience of the moment, I'd say too. And when I say my, it's not like something I possess, but it's just the experience of this moment maybe is better. Also has given me the perspective, because of course, yes, there is the relative period of 20 years. It's provided the perspective that, yeah, that was really just a beginning. You know, that was really just a marker saying, okay, now you do this. But no, but I don't know what it is that I'm going to do, but that's it, you know, something else now. Whereas it's not like a culmination and an accomplishment, which I'm sure, Joey, you can relate to, you know, not having 20 years, but fewer time, but still, you can recognize that it's, oh, okay, that this is like not really a culmination of all these years of practice, but it's like, oh, okay, now what? And Bart is facing this himself in a matter of weeks, you know. So.
Yeah, and it's for me, it's as if almost it feels fresher every day. Something like that. Because it feels very much like every situation is very different. Like every sesshin is very different. Oh, it struck me so much last weekend. How it felt like I needed to reinvent everything, or I mean, I reinvent, adjust. And so it made it totally new.
Well, thank you for saying that. As your teacher, I am delighted to hear that. I'm really very happy to hear that. Thank you.
And I don't want to lay it on too thick, but as your student and witness of this last weekend, it was an absolutely spectacular success. It was very, very different, although, you know, all the same things happen and everything. So, yeah, great.
Wonderful. You're all great Zen students. Yeah.
It was very much what's the example demonstration of what you were talking about when you had been to this big group meeting, that every group is different, every sesshin is different, and at the same time, I mean, it's the same, everything is respected and all, but the minute it flows into a different group of people, and there were two people who had never been to a sesshin, which makes it different too, that the flow adapts to the riverbed sort of thing. It was very obvious to me, at least this weekend.
Grisha.
Hi everyone. I'm not sure, but I think this is the last Dharma talk before you go away. We go on vacation. I was on a meeting. I wasn't able just now. I just jumped in. I jumped anyway. I'm sorry, but I wanted to be with you, my brothers and sisters in my spiritual path, and with my spiritual mother and teacher, even if only a glimpse before we have a break. And it feels really important. Even just jumping in and not really understanding what you're talking about. Even though my life is not in the best way of practicing Zen as a Sangha and going, don't have time or whatever, trying to keep having this in this space. And Roshi always say, for me it's a big koan, how to bring Zen to everyday life. And trying to practice and notice whether or not I'm able to be in the present moment, connected from the heart, and doing stuff like Roshi can do, like talking and listen to everyone, not judging. Even though sometimes it feels, oh, but it's not acting well. Why you don't? But it's not about that. And it's a big learning, I think. And thank God sometimes I can do it. Perhaps thank God a lot of times I cannot do it, and that makes me paying attention, wanting to be more focused and with me and the other, and the not separated nature. And that's why I came and wanted to talk a bit with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. That's what we were talking about. So, Adrien?
I was going to say, you didn't miss anything. We're always talking about the same thing, Krisha.
Right.
But I'm sure Debbie will be happy to summarize it in 30 seconds for you. Debbie, your turn. She fled.
That was my answer. Wait a minute.
Okay.
I got it. I got it the first time.
I know, but boys are slow.
He held up the flower, and the only one who smiled was Krisha. Very good.
So we can say what Emil Roshi was talking about, one mind is this flower that happened now, yeah? Okay. That happened now, that is here now.
Nice. Yep.
Well, that I wish you a happy birthday also for the all
You.
those long years, and thank you for having gone through all that all the way up to now. Always up to now. Yeah, it actually feels weird talking about this is our last session last evening. I'm feeling kind of sad. It's our last also, it was Thursday was our last sitting in the center in Paris that we're stopping next year. Yeah, but at the same time, lots of stuff happening. And I was thinking about also what you were saying about, well, death and life and birth and death, and as you know, some might know that I'm my great aunt is putting an end to her life in 2 weeks now, and I'm going with her. And we're having a difficult discussion with my mother, who doesn't understand what I why I'm doing it. And it's so hard to share. I share what it is. I mean, what you've been talking about, and how it does change. Well, I don't know what's going to be there, but in any way, the relation, or the how we engage in life and death, and it's and what you were saying about the person's reaction at the retreat, screaming and not wanting to be there, and probably because she's scared of what it is. And I'm just thinking, well, that's maybe what's happening probably for my mother too, because it is frightening. So yeah, an experience. But I'm really happy that on the following day, I'll be with you all in Portugal for the retreat. That's precious. And I feel very lucky to have you all. So thank you.
Well, and it is true that it's very different when someone chooses the moment when they will end their life rather than going on their way, however you want to say it, by natural causes. That's very different. So how do we then accompany them, and how do we experience that? It's true, it's very different. I heard someone say on the beach, which maybe it's not exactly the same, but these women were sitting together and I couldn't help but hear their conversation. And when this woman said, "Oh, well, natural shade is much better than unnatural shade." And I'm still trying to figure out what that means, you know, like what is natural shade and what is unnatural shade? I guess, you know, like putting up a parasol is different than sitting under a tree, I think probably is what she was meaning. But actually, it's not, the shade is just the shade. So that's what I think of when I think of someone choosing to end their life, rather than just that's where their life goes. And I can understand that it's a, you know, it's not an easy thing, especially when it's someone who's family, close.
So I'll share that it reminds me of my neighbor across the street, who has himself almost died. I was helped, you know, call the, he's quite old, he's over 80. But anyway, because we have been, his death is approaching faster than for others, or more, he's more aware of it than others, let's say, for various reasons. So we have been talking about this for quite some time already, and part of all the discussions we've had about that around this idea of death, and I mean his experience of it, is there, he shared that a very good friend of his a number of years ago already had made the same choice as your great aunt. So she was ill, and so she decided to get this I mean whatever it's called in French or in English technically, and so, but he wasn't really aware of it. So I think she left on a, she decided to go and see all her friends, except she was sort of in a wheelchair, so she couldn't really do it herself. So she grabbed, I think, her husband or something initially to take her in the car, and her first stop in the car was to see Theo, my neighbor. And then without warning him, she said, "Okay, so now you're coming with me to see all the other people," because all the other people were friends they had in common. And he, of course, he let go of everything he was doing to go with her and do this sort of 10-day trip all across France or something to see all of their old friends that she was saying goodbye to one after the other. And he was there with her all the way to the end. So first of all, I can give you his number if you want. secondly, I'm sorry for being so cliche, and as you're sharing a coming experience, I share the idea and the other story that I have about that same sort of thing. Sorry about that. And I suppose lastly, it is what this decision allows, you know, it's that you sort of set a date, but then you can decide really, which must be odd as well in a way, but you can decide exactly what you're going to do with the time you have left. Which I suppose we can do, it applies in a way to our experience every moment as well, that I hope we are able to choose more and more consciously and what we do with every single moment. Oh, wow. So that was the third philosophical point of this talk. Thank you.
And I apologize. I didn't want to put a macabre tone to our last sitting together.
Well, we can see it's opening in another horizon. You know, it's an opening in another space. And it brings us to the same point, you know, Adrienne's saying, so yes, we do have a choice. How do we want to live this moment? We do. Every moment we have that choice. It's not, I'm not, that doesn't mean that we control all the situation around us, but we choose, we can choose our experience and cultivate. We like this word, you know, cultivate this awareness, cultivate, well, what is it that I would like to do with this moment, this one precious moment? Do I want to spend all of my resources and time and energy about trying to fight against dying, like the guy that Joe cited? Or do I want to devote my time and resources and energy to really living fully this moment? And being present with my with others, and sharing this moment with others. So we are out of time, actually, because we're in the relative here, so functioning in this aspect. So this is our final moment. And thank you, and I wish you all a wonderful summer, and I will see many of you in a few weeks. And take good care until then.